Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Pythagoras, the ancient, possibly the first or second acknowledged philosopher, and the originator of a lot of very interesting maths and philosophy, which we have to bring forward. Now, the fact of the matter is that he's so ancient, 570 BC before Christ, in the old money. BCE is the modern way of discussing, before the common era, rather than referring to Christ. But he's so ancient that there is no direct records of him. It's only fragments of reference to him which are brought forward. And so there's, with the less scholarly people, the enrichment of a coherent story which has been brought through at various ages. In the 1700s, 1800s, it's always been mentioned about Pythagoras. And at the moment there's rigorous analysis of what's actually been written, and by the time you go through that rigorous analysis, it's almost incomprehensible. I was just looking at this Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, and it's pretty incomprehensible. By it, you get a knowledge of not directly Pythagoras, but of different people's views of Pythagoras, and how it's important, how it brings forward. Now, we've just done at length podcast on Leibniz, and Leibniz is a monadist, M-O-N-A-D, and monad is essentially a very ancient, the most ancient belief that really a number is a soul, sort of, so to speak, that souls of existence, a point of existence, is there. So he's sort of, there's certain various people of time who've reached right back and have grabbed onto this idea that Pythagoras has grabbed onto, which is a very ancient idea, this sort of basic particle of philosophy, which some people put in as a particle, actual physical particle, and it sort of stretches throughout history as an area which people sort of, they throw the baby with the bath of water out. They throw out all of Leibniz, they throw out all of Pythagoras, they keep a very simple belief in philosophy. However, the philosophy that they receive is this magazine edited philosophy, which was so popular in the 40s or 50s when people were putting the stories together, and then they were taught at school. That's become their knowledge of things. But the idea I want to go back is this idea of Leibniz. So he's from 1650 to 1720, roughly, for that period. And he reintroduced the last big hurrah of the monad, which we'll get back to. Then the monad again has had a resurrection. So it was discovered, rediscovered, redefined in the 1960s, and it's now in modern computing science. So there's the monad theory, and that's where the actual component of computing is made a bit more robust, as far as I can see. I must admit, I've looked at the monad stuff, and it's a very, you know, it is a form of computer science. So monad has sort of skipped around and bounced around the place from Pythagoras, and there's been intervening philosophies, been reintroduced by Leibniz, Bruno, a very famous Giordano Bruno, one of the most famous, absolutely lovable philosophers, eventually got burnt by the Pope in 1599, but he was really at the end of the Inquisition era, so they rarely burnt anyone by that late in the Inquisition, or the Papal Inquisition, but he was really, burn me, burn me, burn me, said Bruno. So you've got the monad thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the definition of what a monad is, and it's one of these very, very scary things. So it's something that people are very attracted to draw. They draw a monad when they're drawing an atom. It's a very attractive philosophy. It's a very, if you were just thinking about things by yourself, unaided, you'd begin to think along these lines. You'd think that you can go down in scale. There's nothing to stop you going up in scale. There's nothing to stop you going down in scale. Well, of course, there are things that stop you going down in scale. So we'll just cover those two things. Going down in scales, you're limited by the Schrodinger wave equation and the Planck constants, which says that the minimum you can go down the scale reducing scale by a factor of a billion gives you an atom around the size of a little soccer ball. And you can't go beneath that because there's a law in the Schrodinger wave equation which says that the size of something is inversely proportional to its mass. So if you get less of something, it actually grows bigger after a certain thing. You can't go bigger than a certain distance just due to the expansion of the universe. This is sort of, I think, a very, very interesting thing. So the maximum size you can go through is 93 billion light years. So I like to think that if you make a billion light years equal a millimeter, the universe is a little ball 93 millimeters across. But monadism means that I can, of course, imagine things smaller than this and imagine things bigger than that. And so it's really interesting to actually look at what this monad is. And so I'm going to go through that and then quickly go into a very light view of Pythagoras. I've picked up a fairly lowbrow internet briefing. And it doesn't go into any of the beautiful stories. Like, as you read, you get more and more beautiful stories. Some are said to be true, some are said to be hypocritical, some are said, things that people say are true, others say are hypocritical, other things that people say are hypocritical are true. It's vice versa. But it's a beautiful set of stories about Pythagoras. I'll talk about him in a short while, but I want to talk about the monad. The monad has a symbol. And the symbol of the monad is the Bohr atom. It's got a central nucleus and a round outside. And I read it. The circle with a dot is used by the Pythagoreans and later Greeks to represent the first metaphysical being, the monad, or the absolute. And this is sort of the sort of fundamental building block of thought which you go up. So it's a metaphysical being. It's actually a thought with a spirit. It's something pretty amazing to go across. So monad, capital, it's M-O-N-A-D. Monad, from the Greek monas, or singularity, or alone. Now, of course, black hole is a singularity. It refers to the cosmology, creation of theories. In cosmology, which means creation theories, the first being divinity, or the totality of all beings. It's a pretty amazing thought. The concept was reportedly conceived by the Pythagoreans, not Pythagoras himself, or some writings that has Pythagoras, but Pythagorean sect. And they're really the first communists. If you had to look at a group of people, they were sort of Soviets, back ancient Soviets, and may refer variously to a single source acting alone, or an indivisible origin, or both. So this is what came before the chicken and the egg, and the answer is what came before everything in the ancient terms is the monad. The concept was later adopted by other philosophers such as Leibniz, who referred to the monad as the elementary particle. But it's not a particle, a physical particle, it's a particle of thought. It has geometric counterpart, which is debated and discussed contemporaneously by the same groups of people. So let's talk about what the monad is. It's sort of, what is it? It's something I think we can't imagine in our science world. Okay, this is very short because there's not a lot of people think, a lot of people, it's a very central concept, but it's a lot of people don't talk about it. According to Hippolytus, the worldview was inspired by the Pythagoreans, who called the first thing that came into existence the monad. which begat, bore the dyad, the Greek word for two, which begat the numbers, and begat the point, begetting lines, begetting finesses. Except it meant divinity, the first being or the totality of all beings, referring to the cosmogony, creation of theories, various as the source, acting alone or indivisible origin, and the equivalent comparators. So basically monad is the first thing before number. It's the thing which popped into existence, is probably the number one, and then from the number one we counted other things from it. Now, the Pythagorean concept. For the Pythagoreans, the generation of number series was related to the objects of geometry and cosmology. According to Diogenes, from the monad evolved the dyad. From it, numbers, and from numbers, points, lines, two-dimensional entities, three-dimensional entities, bodies, culminating in four elements of earth, fire, and water, and the rest of the world is built up. So there you have it. Something that is something a bit hard to get your mind around, how it's evolved, but this is sort of like the starting thought. And reading Leibniz, it's you really get into it. Monads being having succession, you know, shell within shell, eventually gets up to monads of higher levels, animal monads and souls and that type of stuff. All very confused. Now we're going to give you a quick read from thefamouspeople.com, TFP, The Famous People, Pythagoras. One wonders why people need this website, but I do, because it's rather small. It's rather quick. Quick facts about Pythagoras. He's born in 570 BC. He's Greek. There's a Greek... This concept of being Greek. I don't know whether there's a concept of the Greek nation. He died 75. Born in Samos. Philosopher, is that true? Philosopher and mathematician, spouse, Theno, father, someone else. He's got four children. Argonaut, Damo, Myla, and Telauges. He's died in 495 BC, and death at Metapontium. Okay, so there's a surrounding famous stories about him being a vegetarian. I don't know where this will come out. And being fearful of beans, and believing that the beans stalks had tubes in them which went down to the underworld. So when he was chasing people, he upset them. And they chased him into a bean field, and rather than walking around the beans, he died. He was actually killed by his own vegetarianism. Okay. Pythagoras was an Ionian philosopher and mathematician born in the 6th century in Samos. Most of the information available today has been recorded a few centuries after his death, and as a result, many of the available accounts contradict each other. However, this much is certain. Okay, do you like that? Forget everything I've said. This is much certain. And this is a fundamental thing. He is really on the edge of recorded history. He was born from a merchant from Tyre and studied under various teachers since early childhood. When he was around 40 years old, he left Samos. Some say he went to Egypt to study under the temple priest and returned after 15 years, while others say he went straight to Croton to open a school. And that's different things. The opening of the school is something he tried to teach mathematics. One of the many stories is he was a frustrated maths teacher. Nonetheless, it's certain that his main place of activity was Croton. And there, C-R-O-T-O-N, so I have to look up where that is in the ancient world. And there he set up a brotherhood and made important contributions to mathematics, philosophy, and music. His followers, known as the Pythagoreans, maintained strictly loyal and the secrecy. Another established fact is Pythagoras travelled extensively. Some accounts also claim that he went to India to study under the Hindu Brahmins. Contradictions also exist about his death, but there's unanimity that he was hounded and killed by his enemies. Okay, well, So even there, there's stories about him trying to teach and being frustrated, trying to work out about it. Secrecy is a really big thing of the Pythagoreans. It's the story of esoteric knowledge comes from. So a lot of the words that we use are associated with the Pythagoras, associated with the Pythagorean legends. So legendly, he set up a maths cult, a maths communist cult without money and ownership of property. And there was a silence, a code of silence. And if you were silent for long enough, you got to go with inside the curtain, which is inside the, to get knowledge. And that's the knowledge inside the curtain. It's called esoteric knowledge. So we know that enough. I'll have to look that up. So at least we've got some record of him in terms of our linguistic, whether it's true or not, it's the actual theory of its three. So here are the basic points. They came. Early life. Pythagoras was born in the eastern Aegean of Samos in 750 BC. It's believed his mother Pythus was a native of the island. His father was a merchant from Elevon, dealing in gems. It is also said he had two or three siblings. Well, that's a new interesting information that he sold, dealt in gems. Pythagoras spent most of his early childhood in Samos. As he grew up, he began to accompany his father on trading trips. It's believed that his dad once took him to Tyre, where he studied under the scholars in Syria. It's possible that he might have also visited Italy during those early years. Well, I suppose. Subsequently, Pythagoras studied extensively under different teachers. He learnt poetry, could recite Homer, and play the lyre. Apart from the scholars in Syria, he also studied under wise men of Chaldea, Pyrrhus, and Cyrus, who is one of the early teachers under which he soon studied philosophy. Well, let's try. It's a new person I have to study, who this person is. So if I can remember. At the age of 18, Pythagoras daily travelled to Miletus to meet Thales. Or Thales is really the first philosopher, the first famous Thales, of a master of mathematics and astronomy. Although by then Thales had become too old to teach, the meeting was quite fruitful. It elicited to him an interest in science, mathematics, and astronomy. So Thales is our generally number one, acknowledged as the number one first philosopher, and he's number two, Pythagoras. It's getting really vague after this. He must have also studied under Thales' student Anaximander. In later works, Pythagoras shows how striking similarity to the works of Anaximander. Both his astronomical and geometrical theories seem to have naturally developed from the theories of the elder philosopher. So that's Thales and Anaximander. In 535 BC, so that's when he's 35 years old, Pythagoras left for Egypt to study under the temple priests. Earlier, Thales had also given him the same advice. However, according to other accounts, he went to Egypt to escape the tyranny of Polycrates, who was the ruler of Samos. I think Polycrates is a tyrant. It's amazing how, when you read about Greek tyrants, you go, hey, that's just a modern manager. Amazing. Pythagoras lived in Egypt for around 10 years, so he's 45. After completing the necessary rites, he first gained admission to the temple of Diospolis and accepted into priesthood. It's also believed that for some years he studied under the Egyptian priest Onippus of Helippos. Now, it's interesting that this religious stuff means he's setting up a religious cult. In 525 BC, Emperor Cambyses II of Persia conquered Egypt. Well, that's an interesting fact. Pythagoras was captured and taken prisoner to Babylon. Here he associated himself with the Persian priest, also known as the Magi, who began to study mathematics and mathematical science, as well as the music under them. Well, that's how we got the Persian-Babylonian things. The Pythagorean theorems is Babylonian things. After 3 years, in 522, Cambyses of Persia died under mysterious circumstances, and Polycrates, the tyrannical rule of Somas was also killed. These events offered Pythagoras an opportunity to return to Somas. Somas, which he did in 520 BC. On return to Somas, Pythagoras opened a school called the Semicircle. However, his method was, I can't really read this, and they wanted to get rid of him. They didn't like him, the Semicircle. The story I heard was that he was chucked, he gave up because the kids ran away from him. And so they gave him city administration. I can't really read it because of an internet problem with their printing out of the page. It involved city administration, which did not appeal him. In 518 BC, he shifted base to Croton. Yeah, Croton in southern Italy. That's where I thought it was. Some accounts say he went there to study law and stayed back. Other accounts claim that he went there in 530 BC to escape the tyranny of Procrates, not to Egypt. Whatever the case, it was there in Croton that he started the first teaching in full scale, quickly gathering a band of followers. Subsequently, he set up a brotherhood which was open to both men and women. It developed into a religious philosophical school with considerable political clout. The Pythagoreans, as the followers of Pythagoras were called, could be divided into two sects. Those who lived and worked at the school were known as the mathematikoi, or learners. Others who lived outside the school were known as the acousmatics, or listeners. And this is absolutely true. The listeners were not allowed to speak for 5 years before they could get inside the knowledge. Pythagoras was the master of both sects. The mathematicoi had to lead their life according to rules which were defined by what they ate, wore, and even spoke. They had no personal possessions and followed strict vegetarianism. Contrarily, the acousmatics were allowed to own personal properties and eat non-vegetarian food. They attended the school only during the daytime. The society practiced strict secrecy, not only about rites and rituals, but also about what was taught. Therefore, although it made outstanding contributions to mathematics, it's hard to distinguish between the works of Pythagoras and that of his followers. Yet, Pythagoras' contribution to mathematics can never be overstated. Well, I think it can be, unfortunately. Today, he's best remembered for his concept of numbers. He believed that everything could be reduced to numbers, and these numbers had their own characteristics, strengths, and weaknesses. In so much so that various numbers had various magic importance, like 10 was magical, 5 was magical. They all had. It's important to read it. I was reading through the story of it. So he also had the harmony of the spheres and notes and stuff like that. Let's see if they get into him. To him, oh well, there you go. To him, 10 was the most complete number because it made up of the first four digits: 1 + 2 + 3 + 4. And when written in dot notation, they formed a triangle. He also believed geometry to be the highest mathematical studies, although one could explain the physical world, which is a pretty amazing thing. Pythagoras' belief relieved from his observation of mathematics, music, and astronomy. For example, he noticed that vibrating strings produce harmonious tones only when the ratios between the length and strings were length of the string were whole numbers. Later, he realized these ratios could be extended to other instruments, which indeed turned out to be incorrect. Galileo's dad had to work on it. And that's pretty amazing. They're the same tension. That's pretty amazing. And again, that would be a form of quantum mechanics, I would put. He also promulgated propaginated the soul was immortal. On the death of a person, it takes up a new form, and thus moves from person to person, and even to lower animals through a series of incarnations. Okay. Unfortunately, again, it says, we are using cookies. It says, we know that Pythagoras himself was a good musician and could play the lyre well. Believers in mysticism, he also held certain symbols and have mystical significance, like the monad. and interaction between the opposites was essential for the future of the world. So the balance, the contrary of opposites, which is the just there's so many future, the harmony of opposites, it's called these. It's all that the opposites there. And was it Kant took this opposite to the extreme, the not. God was the not. He also taught the earth was the sphere in the center of the cosmos. He held that all other planets and stars were spherical because the sphere is the most solid perfect figure. It's amazing that got for his quote, "If there be light, then there be darkness. If cold, heat, height, depth, solid, fluid, if hard, soft, if rough, smooth, if calm, tempest, if prosperity, adversity, if life, death." I don't quite understand what that means. Pythagoras is most famous for his concept of geometry. It is believed he is the first to establish the sum of angles of a triangle is equal to true right angles, and that a right angle triangle is the square, well, obviously not. Although the last mentioned theorem is discovered by Babylonians, okay, there you go, Pythagoras was the first to prove it. It is believed that he devised tetrarchs and the triangular figure of four rows, which adds up to 10, it's according to him, was a perfect number. Pythagoras married Theno, his pupil at Croton. She was also a philosopher. Oh, well, I have to realize that in her own right. Unfortunately, it says this page has cookies. I'm sorry about that. Included in it. However, some say she was not his wife, but a disciple. So I'll have to look up that. Isn't it amazing? You learn those new things. According to various accounts, he had a couple, and the couple had a son named Telugs and three daughters, Damo, Argonaute, and Maya. Some sources also put the number to 7. Their second daughter, Agnot, was known scholar for the rites of Dionysus. Sacred discourses have been credited to him. The third daughter, Maya, is said to have married a famous wrestler, Milo of Croton. It's further said that Milo was associated with Pythagoras, and associated with Pythagoras saved his life from a roof collapse. This is all in 10 years. I don't know how much you do in 10 years. Like most geniuses, Pythagoras was very outspoken and created many enemies. One of them instigated the mob against Pythagoreans and set fire to a building where he was staying. However, Pythagoras was able to escape. He went on to Metapontium and starved himself to death. Okay. Some other accounts say he was caught in a conflict of Agrigentium and the Syracusans and was killed by the Syracusans. The accounts that I have is that the Syracusans were just upset with him and keep excluding him from his cult. Whatever the cause of his death, according to most accounts, he died in 495 BC. The theorem of Pythagoras and Pythagoras or Pythagoras' theorem still bears his legacy. And that's the story of Pythagoras. That's a very short story of Pythagoras. The stories that I do have is, the enduring stories, is that he tried to teach, they said the semicircles chucked out, but he did have poor success in teaching maths, and he was really dedicated to maths, and he did run a cult in Croton, C-R-O-T-O-N, in Italy, but the story I have is that he set up money in a market, he set up a market stall and offered a boy a penny each time he stood for a mathematics lesson, and when the money ran out, he ran away. The boy ran away, and Pythagoras was very shocked by it. But there's a lot more story here of him doing a lot more, living a lot more understanding of life, gathering information from the ancient world to suddenly bring in to his Croton as a music player. Now, one of the things is that entertainment was really thin on the ground in the ancient world, so they'd often have music players and bards. People would be really... So if you play music in the ancient world, that was a really, really big thing. Music, ancient music, was really, really big.
And so it had a big effect. If you read a lot of ancient stories, or histories, if you read the traveling scholars, people who could sing and music had a really big, deep impact. It was music and mathematics was really added together. And then there's these different stories of this cult. Now, I would venture, if you're thinking of a cult, I would say I would put Pythagoras as sort of like a combination of an ancient Einstein who got to start it up and a Hubble, whatever his Church of Scientology, that type of stuff. And these people, this cult, has really got sick, quite sick and out of hand. And those two, the learners and the listeners, I sort of like that. It's an amazing story. And of course, the Pythagoreans existed at a force long after he was there. It's interesting that that females got to work so much in this ancient cult, and ostensibly it was a vegetarian and there was no money, no possessions within it. So a lot of these proto societies that we recognize nowadays as communism were being experimented within the ancient world. And there's a certain feeling that in Western reporting of Pythagoras, because his beliefs were slow, close to modern day communism, that a lot of the Western reporting of him is lost in terms of they just sort of don't put down on paper what his beliefs were, because they're very close to socialism. Again, that's not very popular in the big Western universities. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll put this in as Pythagoras. And I should do an advertisement for it at the moment, that the podcast will be put in the app, and the app will automatically have the quiz and the finder word with it. Thanks a lot for listening. See you later. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.